This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Before astronauts like Neil Armstrong and John Glenn could become household names, somebody had to figure out a way to get them into space. And it turns out that at the height of the space race, an elite group of black women were among the somebodies who worked for NASA as human computers. They analyzed seemingly endless sets of data and helped put rockets and eventually people into space. In her new book, writer Margot Lee Shetterly details the stories of the black women who helped win the space race. It's called Hidden Figures. The book is already being made into a movie, and that is set for theaters next month. Margot speaks tonight at Moorhead Planetarium and Science Center at UNC Chapel Hill. But first, she joins me in the program. Margot Lee Shetterly, welcome to The State of Things.
Thank you, Frank. I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you. A remarkable story. Tell us more about these women that you chose to highlight in this book. First of all, a little bit about how you found out about this story, about the black female mathematicians who worked for what would ultimately be called NASA.
Well, in a very real way, I grew up with this story. My dad is he's now retired, but he worked his entire career at the NASA Langley Research Center in Hampton, Virginia, where I'm from. And these women, these were people that he worked with at NASA, but they were, for me, these were people who were just women in the community. They were, you know, the parents of people I went to school with. And so that's really how I saw them. And it really wasn't until, you know, my husband, who is not from Hampton, Virginia, was listening to my dad talking about them and asked the question that I think I've been asked more than any other question since this book came out, which is, why haven't we known about this story? So he asked that question, and I asked myself really for the first time, well, why haven't I really known about this or really paid attention to this? And how did this all begin? And so it really set me off on a 6-year journey of getting to the bottom of this story of these women.
Well, I gave us a little sketch, but tell us more about exactly what this is. Who were these women and what were they doing?
Right. So many people don't know, but American Aeronautics and the space program really had its genesis in Hampton, Virginia. That's where the first installation of what would become NASA, which was then called the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, basically people doing research on airplanes, they set up right there in Hampton, Virginia. So as the need for computing, I mean, this is technology, science, you know, we need numbers. As the need for computing to improve airplanes, make them fly faster, safer, more efficiently, as that grew between World War I and World War II, the laboratory decided to employ women in a way that was very similar to a clerical pool. You know, we've got these problems to solve. We're going to put a bunch of women in a room. We're going to give the work to them and see what happens. Well, that was a success. They started the first computing pool with 5 white women, actually, who started out from the one of whom was at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro, then a women's college graduate. Mm-hmm. And it was successful. The women were very good at their jobs. These were math graduates, extremely, you know, intelligent, brilliant women. In 1943, a group of black women started working there at the laboratory. And this was after a gentleman named A. Philip Randolph, who was a civil rights leader, pressured Roosevelt to open the federal government to African Americans and, you know, other people, Jewish people, a number of people who had been locked out of those jobs. And not long after that, these black women also took a seat at the laboratory. They were doing the same work as their white female counterparts, which was sitting down at a desk with a mechanical calculator, a slide rule, and pencil and paper, and processing data that came from the aeronautical research.
Now, were there also, I mean, why was it that the space program, then again, an advancement of our aeronautics program, chose women, or did they add women to the workforce?
Well, one of the reasons was really practical. The women were very good at these jobs, and they could actually be paid less than the men. This was work that was seen as subprofessional. That literally was the classification. So it was considered more advanced than clerical work, but at a lower level than the professional engineering work, which was how the men were classified.
And this is before computers, so you have to try to imagine this. The whole space program begins, the Manhattan Project began on adding machines, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't have, you know, the data processing speed that we had now. So a lot of people in a room with adding machines and working things out, as you say, slide rules. Mm-hmm. So it's higher math, it's advanced math. But you need people to do this and to figure out how to even approach the problem, right?
Absolutely. So what would happen is, you know, you'd set up the same way we would set up a system of equations to solve something now. You know, in this particular instance, they were trying to figure out for example, the optimal shape of an airplane wing to cut through the air most efficiently. So they'd set up all of the physics, the mathematical equations defining, you know, setting up the problem that they were looking for. They would then either put instruments on real life planes, fly them, you know, and take the data. Or what they really specialized there in Hampton at the Langley Memorial Aeronautical Laboratory was putting parts of planes in wind tunnels, and they would simulate flights and they would get data from that. But regardless of the source of the data, they would hand the data over to the women, and the women would then have something very like an Excel spreadsheet on a piece of paper with the equations laid out at the top, and they would then have to take the data, and we are talking reams, huge, I mean, just endless eye-numbing pages of data, and do those calculations. You know, x squared plus y squared equals z. You give the numbers for x and for y. You solve for z, and you go on to the next little,
This is action over time, so it's every third second you're adding a new set
Absolutely.
Of data because it's decelerating, accelerating, and this may have been a 5-minute, 10-minute, 2-hour experiment, so you can imagine.
This is a lot of, and it had to be
pencils.
Right. You know,
yeah,
this
yeah.
is the thing. I mean, you know, we get on airplanes today, and we take for granted that yeah. the airplane is going to fly, and it's going to be safe, it's going to take off and land safely. This is the responsibility of those women to make sure that the planes were optimized for efficiency and for safety. People's lives were on the line.
Those women at the time were known as the girls. Tell us about the gender dynamics back then.
Well, I think people are really sort of surprised. You know, I really tried to conserve as much as possible the language that the women that I interviewed used. And so regardless of the woman's marital status, her age, they were generally speaking referred to as girls. You know, the girls were the ones who, generally speaking, did the calculations. The men, the engineers, were the ones who set up the problem solving. You know, the brawny work of engineering was handled by the men. But in many cases, these women, even if they were classified as subprofessional, you know, kind of computing employees, many of them actually did a lot of the higher level work and were doing the work of engineering alongside the men. And over time, many of those women actually earned the title of engineer. You know, it took a lot for them to do that, but they were able to, some of them eventually get the title that reflected the actual work that they were doing.
Did they ever get the kind of equal respect for their contribution?
It really depended on who they worked for. You know, so much of the work that they did was anonymous, but there were quite a few women who did get their names. I mean, even in the 1940s and 50s, there were cases of women getting their names on the research report, which was a great surprise for me.
Well, a group of all black women were also known as the West Computing Group, and that's a reference to the segregated West area of Langley's facility. Facilities in Hampton. So now let's tell us more about the racial dynamics. This is the tidewater of Virginia in the 1940s and 50s.
Yeah. So, you know, we're talking about a time when Jim Crow segregation was still the law in the state of Virginia. So although these women were walking into a job that as professional mathematicians, you know, for any woman, this was something that was a real a breakthrough in terms of her career. The black women were segregated into the West Area Computing Office, and everyone knew that the East Area pool was the white female pool and the West Area pool was the black women. They had a separate table at the cafeteria. It said colored computers, which is sort of, you know, you think of like a, you know, an iMac or something when you hear that, you know, those brightly colored electronic computers, but they were called the colored computers. And they also had colored girls' bathrooms, you know, all of these different aspects. Even as they were doing the same work, they were still required to comply with the segregation laws of the state of Virginia.
How were these women recruited?
They were largely recruited through the schools, you know, through the colleges. And I think one of the real fascinating aspects of this history is that the white women largely came from female colleges. They came from schools like Sweetbriar and Hollins and the New Jersey College for Women. the black women, generally speaking, came from black colleges. They came from Bennett, and they came from Hampton Institute, now called Hampton University, which was right across town from Howard University, West Virginia State. So, you know, the segregation kind of had this interesting, both the gender segregation and the racial segregation, concentrated talent at these schools. And those became the places that they knew to look for women for these jobs.
I'm talking with Margot Lee Shetterly about her book, Hidden Figures. And what you do in the book, too, is tell the stories of the actual women and the particular women that would stand alone, apart from all of the kind of social dynamics that are inherent. These are remarkable stories and some remarkable women. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about one of the, start with Katherine Johnson.
Mm-hmm. So Katherine Johnson's a name that perhaps people have heard, particularly in the last year, because a year ago, President Obama awarded her the Presidential Medal of Freedom for her work at a moment that is the one that's really dramatized in the film that is now being made of this story, in which she calculated the orbital equations, the equations that define the orbital mechanics for John Glenn's flight. And so for those of you who don't know, John Glenn, who is now in his 90s, became a national hero because this orbital flight, so a flight that took him outside of the Earth's atmosphere and orbiting around the planet, you know, like satellites. This is, you know, something that we understand now, but this was a big deal back in 1962. His flight was successful, and this was a real moment in which the United States vaulted ahead of the Soviet Union in the space race. Well, back at the Langley Research Center in Hampton, Virginia, an African-American woman was one of the co-authors on the report that laid out the equations for that. And she also then, in the time counting down to that flight, she was asked to double-check the equations. So they've been programmed into the electronic computer, which was a newfangled thing at that time. She had been asked to double-check by hand with her calculating machine, her pencil and paper, the output of the electronic computer as part of a pre-flight checklist for his flight.
Well, there's actually a great story about that and about John Glenn's comment. Because remember, he's about to be lodged in a large thimble and sit still while he spins around the Earth. So
yeah,
his
and
job,
on top of a big exploding
candle.
On top of
a missile,
exactly.
So he's a little concerned about his safety and whether or not the math was right. But tell us the story about kind of how the checks and balances worked.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, this is a really big deal. And we have to remember, you know, we've got electronic computers and our toasters and our cars, everything today. But this was a new thing back then. And, you know, John Glenn, you know, all of these guys obviously concerned about doing everything they could to minimize the possibility of failure at any point along the way in this flight. John Glenn said to the engineers who were responsible for the trajectory analysis, you know, get the girl to do it. What he meant was get the girl, this was Katherine Johnson, check the numbers, make sure the computer output is right, get her to do it by hand. If the girl says the numbers are good, then, you know, I'm ready to go. So it was, you know, one of the many pre-flight checklists for that flight.
It's a great story, one of many in your book. But I think another interesting story is your own personal story, your sense of growing up around all of these women and your sense of normal, that this is what women did. I mean, I'll have you tell it a little bit better. But your perception of women mathematicians because you could see those faces all around you.
Yeah, I was really, in retrospect, extremely fortunate to grow up in, first of all, in a household where I had a black scientist. My father's literally, you know, a research scientist who worked at the NASA Langley Research Center, knew a number of people, you know, who were part of the community who were African-American or female or both. So, you know, when I went to work to see my father, you know, on, you know, send your kids to work day or whatever, I got a chance to see people who looked like me, whether they were African-American, whether they were female, and know that they worked at NASA, which, you know, I mean, you think, wow, they were literally rocket scientists. You know, we use that as shorthand for smart people. And so I was able at a young age to equate being black or being a woman with being a smart person who worked at NASA. And didn't really know that that was unusual until leaving.
Well, now your book has already been made into a movie. I want to play a little bit from the trailer.
Equilateral, isosceles, tetrahedron, I have never seen a mind like the one your daughter has. You have to see what she becomes.
Come on! Move like that.
Catherine! We all gonna end up unemployed riding around in this pile of junk.
You're welcome to walk the 16 miles.
Or sit in the back of the bus.
Kiss me up.
You have identification on?
We're just on our way to work at NASA, sir.
I had no idea they hired.
There are quite a few women working in the space program.
You know what we're doing here? We're putting a human on top of a missile, shooting them into space that's never been done before. I need a mathematician that can look beyond the numbers. Math that doesn't yet exist.
You have someone? Running what I'm
playing. Catherine's the gal for that. She can handle any numbers you put in front of her.
We are a computer at NASA. They let women handle that sort of...
Yes, they let women do some things at NASA, Mr. Johnson.
And it's not because we wear skirts. It's because we wear glasses.
There's a clip from the trailer from the upcoming film Hidden Figures. My guest is writer Margot Lee Shetterly. Her new book inspired the film. The book is called Hidden Figures. And were you involved in the film?
I was a consultant on the film. Yeah. I didn't write the script. But, you know, I was I had a lot of input as to the history and, you know, the research and. It all happened so quickly. It was a really exciting process to not only see these women come to life in this book, but at the same time, see them come to life on the big screen.
My guest, Margot Lee Shetterly, she is a writer. Her book is called Hidden Figures. She's going to speak tonight, 7 o'clock, Moorhead Planetarium at UNC Chapel Hill. Margot, what a pleasure. Thank you for talking with us.
Thanks, Frank. I enjoyed it.
You can find more information about the book and her appearance at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Charlie Sheldon Ormond, Katie Barron, and Laura Pelliser. Robin Copley is our technical director, Brent Wolf, WNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.